give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up.
And good morning. It is KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Minute before 9 o'clock, and it is a Thursday morning. We're about an hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. Then at 10:15, there'll be Flashpoints. At 11 today, we've got Between the Covers. David Naiman will be speaking with Chilean writer Lina Merwane about her book Seeing Red. And all sorts of good stuff coming at you this Thursday morning. Up next, it's an hour of Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Stay with us. That's coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 16th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, a two-day zine conference and social gathering on Saturday, July 9th and Sunday, July 10th in Portland. From 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. on Saturday, there will be tabling and workshops at the Ambridge Event Center, located at 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Then, on Sunday, July 10th, from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m., there will be workshops and a Skillshare at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, located at 1001 Southeast Division Street. Again, that's the 16th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, Saturday, July 9th, and Sunday, July 10th. More information about Skillshares, speakers, workshops, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. If you are listening to KBOO and you're sleeping rough out in the area near the old St. Francis compound over there at, 11th Avenue. Clear out. The cops are there with their inmate team, and it's another sweep. Headlines today from Radio Havana, Cuba. Bolivian President Evo Morales accused the Drug Enforcement Administration of having financed illegal activities by selling confiscated drugs in Bolivia. The Bolivian leader said the DEA kept 50% of the confiscated cocaine from drug trafficking in the country when it had its headquarters in the South American nation. According to Evo Morales, the U.S. Anti-Narcotics Agency confirmed they had used the revenues from illegal drug sales to pay government officials and undercover agents. Morales referred to the triennial plan implemented in 1988 under the government of President Victor Paz Estenssoro, which looked to eradicate coca crops in the Chapare province. This plan had the support of the troops from the Mobile Rural Patrol Unit and was under pressure from the U.S. DEA. A former coca farmer and union organizer, Evo Morales paid his tribute to those who died defending coca farming and fought to expel the DEA from Bolivia. The Bolivian president expelled the DEA from Bolivia in 2008 for espionage and conspiracy against his government and suspended its activities. Former U.S. President Nixon created the DEA in 1973 as part of the War on Drugs. Since its founding, the United States has increased the DEA budget from $70 million to about $3 billion. That's from Radio Havana, Cuba. And today, I invite your calls and comments as I talk about Brexit. But I have some more information to pass on. First, I would like to read verbatim an article from Francesca Fontana, writing for The Oregonian. And, of course, the reason I want to read it verbatim is because I intend to criticize it. She wrote on June 29th, four people were arrested Wednesday morning after Portland police said they disrupted a city council meeting and refused to leave. Joseph Walsh, 74, Robert Lee West, 51, Mary Rose Ng, 38, and David Kiff Davis, 46, started yelling during the meeting, Portland Police Bureau Sergeant Pete Simpson said via email Wednesday afternoon. It's not clear what prompted the ruckus, he said, but noted that Walsh has also made a scene a day earlier during Mayor Charlie Hale's news conference announcing the hiring of Police Chief Mike Marshman. Last December, a federal judge ruled that Hales violated Walsh's First Amendment rights by barring him from city council meetings for months for inappropriate behavior. In one city meeting, city attorneys had said Walsh tossed a pocket-sized copy of the U.S. Constitution toward the mayor. In another incident, a woman asked to be escorted from a meeting because she felt fearful after a verbal dispute with Walsh. The other three people arrested Wednesday are also regular attendants at city meetings, Simpson said. They were taken into custody at 11:30 a.m., booked into Multnomah County Jail on criminal trespass and disorderly conduct charges. Before being taken to the jail, Walsh was treated at OHSU Hospital for breathing difficulties. Francesca Fontana. Now, having read that, you might think that some dangerous people were taken away from the city council and business was allowed to continue as usual. But if you look into social media, or if you happen to have met Mr. Walsh, it turns out something that a bit more brutal happened. Ustream video shows Joe Walsh, who's been in here, a disabled veteran of 74 years, sitting against a granite pillar on the floor at the city council, loudly denouncing the police for allowing a G-Force goon to attack him. I guess it's G4S. I'm sure they mean it to be read G-Force. I'm not sure. Come to think of it, maybe I'm not so sure. Anyway, he shows a bloodied hand to the camera. One cannot avoid the sight of the oxygen tank that he carries with him everywhere. This is the man that Francesca Fontana, Oregonian journalist, wants you to think of as dangerous. Note her technique. She brings up incidents from the past, such as tossing the U.S. Constitution, right? A tiny pamphlet. We're talking tiny, okay? It's folded over. It's stapled. He tossed it in the direction of the council. What was that, years ago? And that is so clearly just a gesture. That is not something anyone has to be afraid of. Oh, but it's so rude. And then we're supposed to believe that the oxygen tank-toting Joe is a threat to women. And I'm just trying to frame that in my head. Someone saying that she needs to be escorted from the meeting because Joe is going to toddle after her with his oxygen tank. It's absurd. And so I'm calling out Francesca Fontana for some extremely bad reporting. KATU is also collaborating with the effort to portray this incident as something other than armed intimidation against the city council. I was not at the city council. I was not at the city hall when the confrontation occurred. But it is clear that this is not a case of the city council calmly defending itself. I'm aware of the tactics of the four protesters, and I know they have turned to loud disruptions after years of being ignored. Boy, are they pointedly ignored as they bring up life and death matters. Something that The Oregonian and KATU just seem to somehow leave out, specifically police murder and abuse to the city council. I'm sure Charlie Hales and his posse are sick of them, and I'm somewhat unsympathetic. If you don't want people yelling at you, Portland City Council, try not collaborating with their oppressors. So I invite your comments and calls. I want to talk about the stories we tell each other. We tell ourselves stories. This is a fundamental part of society and human nature. The stories we tell ourselves become our reality. They're that powerful. So I've undertaken as my goal to try to alter some of these stories. Using uncensored information, I hope to promote more realistic stories, stories that bring out the best in human nature. But if I'm going to be honest about it, I need to call it propaganda. It's my propaganda. It's my opinion. And this is my long-term goal as a radio commentator. But powerful and long-standing stories don't always depend on real information. They're just as likely to represent a longing for acceptance or a resistance to change, and they can even be vehicles for race and class aggression. Take the Brexit story, for example. A shade over half the voters in Britain decided they believe the European Union was a bad deal for them. Now, if I say anything about that, I have to use broad strokes. So before I even start, I'll acknowledge there were good reasons to vote for the exit of Britain from the European Union. The EU is bureaucratic. It is distant. There is a certain sacrifice of sovereignty in economic affairs. And there is the prospect of more and possibly disconcerting change in identifying with the European subcontinent generally, rather than as Britons. Sure, and there were anti-capitalists who preferred not to deal with a distant class of commissars, and there was the brutal treatment of Greece. So I'm not going to present the EU as a wonderful thing. But as I said, I'm getting my broad brush out. There were and are a fair number of people in Britain who are, in their herd instinct and resistance to difference and change, the rough equivalents of Southern white evangelicals in the United States. These people, afraid of the further immigration of people from the U.S. and British wars in the Middle East. Let me phrase that again. Afraid of the further immigration of people from the wars in the Middle East, which ironically are promoted by the U.S. and Britain, added to the majority for the Brexit vote. Pensioners were also led to fear the loss of what little they have, and the Leave faction famously claimed that the periodic contribution to the European Union coffers would be diverted to save the British health service. And so we see now that that was just a lie, and we have something to learn here. The economic difficulties of even the most right-wing among us are still our economic difficulties and still our problems. This brings me to Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And that's where I would like to hear your opinion. The number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Quoting that bastion of commie liberality, the New York Times, 3 weeks after the state's Democratic presidential primary, 500,000 votes remain uncounted. The final tallies, whenever they come in, are not expected to change the result. Hillary Clinton declared victory the night of the June 7th primary when she was up by more than 10 points. In videos, blog posts, and on social media, some supporters of Bernie Sanders are pointing to the uncounted ballots as evidence Mr. Sanders was robbed. Now, I could read you the rest of the article, but it's going to have the same tone. And I rather disagree with the New York Times. If the votes aren't counted, and if there are millions of votes, then it is not clear that Hillary Clinton won California, as they so blandly say. And I would also say that, once again, that's not really journalism, is it? We'll just count the ballots, shall we? And then we'll see who won the primary. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. British voters' decision to leave the European Union in a so-called Brexit shows that Donald Trump can win if Democrats do not embrace bold economic change. That's according to Senator Bernie Sanders, quoted or rather paraphrased in an article in the Huffington Post by Daniel Marins. He writes in an op-ed published in the New York Times on Tuesday titled "Democrats Need to Wake Up." The Democratic presidential candidate elaborates on his initial reaction to last Thursday's Brexit vote. The analysis is part of Sanders' efforts to influence the direction of a Democratic Party that he will not represent on the presidential ticket. He writes, "The Vermont Progressive claims that the United Kingdom's nationalist and at times xenophobic campaign to leave the EU appealed to the frustrations of the British households struggling to get by in their global economy. American workers feel similar anxieties and are susceptible to a similar populist appeal being made by the presumptive Republican presidential nominee." Sanders writes, "Could this rejection of the current form of the global economy happen in the United States? You bet it could. The notion that Donald Trump could benefit from the same forces that gave the Leave proponents a majority in Britain should sound an alarm for the Democratic Party in the United States." And he adds, "Millions of American voters, like the Leave supporters, are understandably angry and frustrated by the economic forces that are destroying the middle class. To avoid such a scenario, Democrats should vigorously support international cooperation and adopt policy positions designed to improve ordinary Americans' economic well-being." That's according to Sanders and other things. Among other things, that means combating corporate tax evasion, not signing trade deals that hurt American workers, and cutting defense spending. Quoting Sanders again, in this pivotal moment, the Democratic Party and the new Democratic president need to make clear that we stand with those who are struggling and who have been left behind. We must create national and global economies that work for all, not just a handful of billionaires, end quote. And Hillary Clinton responded to the Brexit vote by emphasizing the importance of having an experienced leader during tumultuous times. Sanders said he will vote for Clinton, but has declined to endorse her or her campaign. He told CBS This Morning on Friday that he would not endorse Clinton until she embraces more positions favored by his voters, like the $15 per hour minimum wage. The two campaigns are in talks to resolve their differences, Sanders said. And Sanders surrogates have already secured significant policy wins in the largely symbolic Democratic Party platform, including formal support for the $15 minimum wage, expanding Social Security, and abolishing the death penalty. Representative Keith Ellison, a Sanders supporter on the platform committee, criticized the absence of some liberal priorities, but nonetheless called the platform the strongest progressive statement to come from the Democratic Party in years. So I'm curious as to your reaction to that sort of thing. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Brian is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, just a quick about Brexit. The good news is it may well spur Scotland to go independent, which would leave England and Northern Ireland. Which would leave England in a little corner by itself.
And you've got skin in that game.
And the bad news is it's ripping the crap out of my pension. I get a small pension paid every 4 weeks from when I was working there. And boy, it's going to gut my pension. I can't tell you by how much because I get it every 4 weeks and it comes tomorrow. But, you know, it makes me wonder about my fellow countrymen. I mean, I've always thought of myself as a European Scot, but I would like nothing better to see Scotland break away and go into the European Union by itself. We pay more than our fair share of taxes to Westminster, and I'd rather see them going to a common block for even distribution. So that's my 10 cents worth.
All right, then. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Do you want to talk about Brexit? Do you want to talk about climate change? Do you want to talk about the stories we tell ourselves and the state of U.S. journalism? I also want to bring in climate change this week. There's an article in from Democracy Now, which you may have heard, starts off saying extreme weather is sweeping across the United States, from scorching heat in the Southwest to uncontrollable wildfires in California, flooding in Appalachia. In West Virginia, at least 23 people have died in once in a thousand year flooding, and a number of people remain missing across the state. Meanwhile, wildfires are raging up and down the state of California. At least two people have died, and hundreds of homes have been destroyed. So the question is shouldn't this be something that's very much talked about at the Democratic Party platform in Philadelphia? Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. On the subject of climate change, it is the most serious environmental issue New Zealanders face, according to a new report by their environment commissioner. And there's an article on stuff.co.nz, New Zealand website. Dr. Jan Wright says there's no question climate change was worrying and had flow-on effects in her commentary on the government's environment report. That report had singled out rapid growth in dairy farmland and surging carbon dioxide levels as twin threats to the country's government. And speaking for myself, you may have heard that the CO2 bump, well over 400 parts per million, has now gotten as far as Antarctica. So the entire planet is over 400 parts per billion. Excuse me. At this point, climate change will impact on the health of sea, land, and freshwater, our unique and precious biodiversity, and our economy. Dr. Jan Wright said. She also had previously warm communities. They may have to be abandoned or left to deal with major financial costs because of sea level rise. Climate Change Minister Paula Bennett pointed to the momentous Paris Agreement where 175 countries signed up to lowering emissions. Pressure is on us now, she said, to make sure that we keep up with that momentum, that actually it's not just the signing of a document, that it's real action. Innovations were being made in transport and electric vehicles, agri-research, and renewable energy, but there was always more that could be done, she said. The government had a work underway to look at the options to meet New Zealand's commitment to get emissions levels down to 5% below 1990 levels by 2020. It's more of that article, but I want to comment that that is not the tone of the discussion that we have here in the U.S. We're not having a national discussion of what steps we're going to take, what we're all going to do, what things are going to look like, and how we're going to address climate change. The anti-climate change bloc, the petroleum industry in short, the Koch brothers, etc., have managed to keep this as a debate as to whether it's happening or not. Whereas other countries of the world, notably Germany, which recently was as recently as a couple of weeks ago, was paying people to take electricity from its renewable electricity. These other countries are taking broad steps, and their societies are discussing what is actually happening. Here in the U.S., we can't budge. We're locked down. The monopoly media mind control operating on behest of the petroleum companies has got us. So what are we going to do about that? I would suggest that we need to do a lot immediately because as I was reading, this is an emergency. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And Ken is on the air.
Good morning, and happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
You're on a roll with this climate change, and so I don't want to interrupt that, but I'm very upset by the fact that, according to Greg Palast, who's been on a guest of Dennis Bernstein's on KPF. I mean, this election is already a fraud, and it's been a case of in California and in Nevada and other cases, other states as well. There was a article I came upon in the website which talks about the discrepancy between the exit polls and the ultimate counts. And it turns out that Clinton has prevailed in states where the majority of the votes or the votes were counted by electronic voting machines.
Absolutely. And you don't need to apologize for bringing that up because that indeed was something that I had brought up and asked for comment on. GregPalast.com is where you can find one such article. How Bernie Won California, the official uncount by Greg Palast with Dennis Bernstein for Nation of Change, this week on the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the Election Crimes Bulletin revisits the California primary crime scene and attempts to count the votes, something election officials in the state have failed to do. Departing from that, Greg Palast has commented that even Iran can get the votes counted in 2 weeks, and California has not. And despite what I was reading from the New York Times, it would appear that, as Greg Palast says, this election was stolen and right in front of us. And
it just baffles me that, you know, I mean, where's the outrage?
The outrage is missing because the story is controlled by organizations such as New York Times. And they say, well, no matter what, Hillary Clinton won the election. Shut up, shut up, shut up. And people have bought that. And Greg Palast actually very consistently does the work. I mean, this is one thing you can say about Greg Palast. He may be brash. He may have his style and his little hat and all that, which is, you know, good or bad, depending on how you feel about it. But he gets the facts straight. Here's some facts that he puts out. 1,173,943 ballots uncounted. Provisional placebo ballots. They don't want you to vote. They give you pretend ballots. And he's right about that. They are pretend ballots.
Yeah.
There are 712,849 uncounted. This is 2 weeks after the election. Even Iran counts the votes within 2 weeks, and we're not done. 73,116 other votes have not been counted. And he writes, the other secret of American elections that we're not supposed to tell anyone is that we don't count all the ballots. We have ballots which are called spoiled. You've got some fly poop on the ballot, so the computer kicks it out. There's all sorts of reasons why your ballot would spoil. We're looking at maybe 1 million in California. That's a million spoiled that will never be counted, not including those spoiled ones that are already thrown out of the almost 2 million ballots, officially uncounted, maybe closer to 3 million, but officially 2 million. At least 1 million will never be counted. Of the 2 million remaining, one would suspect, I would suspect, he writes, that half would never, ever be counted, especially those provisional ballots. And we kind of saw this coming, too. Speaking for myself, we saw this coming.
Yeah.
It's the stories I was talking about. We have the story that, things happen and elections are messy. That's because we're not told and we don't know what elections are really like. And I would point out that even in these places, I mean, we're using machines that count ballots. There are so many ways to screw with those machines, and they do screw with those machines. And yeah, they do it right here in Oregon.
Yeah.
For example, you load the ballots into the machine. You can get the ballot in a county like Multnomah, where there's a problem for a lot of people drawn to electioneering, because so many people in Multnomah County vote left. You can throw elections, and they have thrown elections, by spoiling ballots, by saying, oh, the signature wasn't right. Or get this, by turning up or down the vacuum on the machine that it needs vacuum to move the paper, and you turn up the machine's speed and you turn down the vacuum so it'll throw out ballots and tear them up. And you say, oh,
I love it. Yeah.
These ballots were folded and crimped, and unfortunately we just can't read them, and they're over there in that box, and we're not going to count them. And this sort of thing goes on constantly. We don't have real elections. When we have real elections, well, and another thing about the machines I want to say, the machines were created by the same people who do your automated banking machines. You go to the ATM, you put in a check, it reads it, it gives you cash. The amount of cash that it gives you is almost always absolutely right. I can't think of one exception in my life. Can you? Have you ever gone to an ATM?
Sure.
And it gave you $80 instead of $100? I mean, I know that it happens, but it's very small. Have you ever put, I mean, because of the machine's fault, have you ever put a check for $926.11 into the machine and it said that it was, you know, something else? I mean, not because of you, but has the machine ever messed up? No, they don't. They're very solid. They know what they're doing. And it's you know, it's not rocket science to count ballots, is what I'm saying.
Furthermore, the guy that I guess that started the Diebold machines was a person who contributed heavily to the George W. Bush campaign.
Yeah, that's a whole story. And it's just something we've gotten used to. And also, the frame of discussion, because of, and I really want to complain about the monopoly media manipulation. I really want to complain about corporate media right now, because they really do define and constrict our lives, and they've done a very good job of it. And Noam Chomsky was right decades ago in calling it mind control. It's freaking mind control. Yeah. That's why there's not a complaint.
Well, it's become the opiate of the masses, so to speak.
You know? Yeah, you're right about that.
The National Public Radio, I tell my friends that the whole idea is to make you feel good. There's always a problem, but we'll take care of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just a little messiness around the edges, you know? Yeah. Price you pay for democracy, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Oh, the story. Yeah. And OPB is terrible about that. You know, it's like OPB is like an endless commercial for imperialism. You know, we're just being attacked by these terrorists, and, you know, in what manner, and
right,
and how efficiently are we going to go to these other countries and just bomb the crap out of people? Build whole villages. And then, you know, numbers kind of leak out, and you never hear on NPR and OPB the true casualty counts. In other words, how many people we slaughtered, and how that has been, that anti-civilian slaughter has been a part of U.S. intimidation tactics in warfare since the Indian Wars.
For a long, long time. And so anyway, I really appreciate your take on it and your explication. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Yes, there are things we've gotten used to, things that we're supposed to shut up about, really. One of them is mass incarceration and the intimidation of people of color by our police forces, which is, getting back to something I started off with, the sort of thing that the City Council 4, who were brutally arrested yesterday, have been complaining about. I'm going to have to ask the engineer for the name of the person who called in again. This happens all the time, by the way. I don't let on, but he has to tell me over and over because my thoughts just go skittering off some other direction. But this, now after several tries, I'll actually say the name Francis. Francis is on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, I called you last show. This morning, I don't usually call twice, but your conversation drew me to you. Now, in addition to looking at the police, we need to look at the DAs throughout this country and how they prosecute cases. But I wanted to offer some hope here. Bernie Sanders has, people tell me that I have to vote for Hillary Clinton because of big bad Trump. To me, it's a setup, the whole thing is a fear tactic here. But Bernie Sanders already has received 10 times as many votes as Nader did in the general election, and that was just in the primary. So for people to scare us and think that we cannot go ahead and vote another way is wrong.
Any way you want to cut it, any way you want to count it, Bernie Sanders is and was a serious contender. He wasn't a spoiler.
There seems to be this
anti-democratic thing within the Democratic Party that you just don't dare go against the flow, otherwise you're going with a spoiler. But go ahead.
Right. And I think that is, we'll see what happens at Philadelphia at the convention. But short of Bernie Sanders becoming the nominee, because that's who should really be the nominee, I've seen in social media, and I believe it to be true, that the Green Party is probably going to grow exponentially after the convention in Philadelphia, because people are just waiting to see what happens and to see if the Democratic Party remains true to itself or if they have to leave, because they will, and they'll join the Greens. And it's very obvious that that's going to happen. And the media isn't covering it, of course, but it's very clear to me, for anyone to think that someone who supports Bernie Sanders and the platform that he has brought is going to give in and vote for Hillary Clinton just to keep Trump from becoming president, they're sadly mistaken.
I know I mentioned it last week, but I like the bumper sticker that says, "Why vote for the lesser of two evils? Vote flu." the legendary evil monster flu from the Lovecraft writings.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying is the Green Party's platform is probably even more progressive than the platform that Bernie has. And I don't be surprised if the Green Party becomes huge, as they say, after the convention in Philadelphia, depending on how it goes.
Well, I thank you for your opinion.
Right. You take care.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Dennis is on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of comments. One is that, you were talking about Greg Palast and his work in the California election.
Yes.
I wonder if you've ever heard of the work of Bev Harris in Olympia. She's been working on this on these kind of issues for years.
Bev Harrison.
What?
Bev Harrison, you say?
Yeah, no, Bev Harris.
Bev Harris.
She has a website, BBC, blackboxvoting.org.
Oh, yes, very much.
Yeah, and she's really, she's she is described as a grandmother who just decided to try to take her country back.
She's been on the air here at KBOO. It's been a while. But
yeah.
Yes, very much familiar with that website and had forgotten her name, I'll have to admit.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing is something really that really scares me. I've heard a report that some of the certain of the people in Congress who are Muslim, including Keith Ellison, are being investigated by Ted Cruz and others for having attended a meeting of having to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. Do you know anything more about that?
I don't. I can't say that I'm surprised that sort of House Un-American Activities Committee attitude is very much a part of the Republican Party these days.
It's really scary. I don't know how serious it's going to get, but don't you think that should be covered by somebody? I don't hear about it anywhere, but I guess I heard it about in Yahoo News. I don't know. I think that's legitimate there. Okay, that's what my comments were.
Okay, thanks very much for bringing that up.
Okay.
Yes, there is a pogrom building up and inaction against American Muslims. And recently, the great prize fighter, Muhammad Ali, died, and I thought it was rather soft-pedaled that he was Muslim. And so, you know, a great advocate and icon has been lost. But we need to look at Muhammad Ali and the way he lived his life. And I say we, I mean the American society generally. And kind of get over the fear that's been inculcated in us by Dick Cheney and the gang since September 11th, 2001. The fear is just fear. We all need to take a deep breath and say, oh, that's our fellow Americans that are being railroaded into jail. It's our fellow Americans who are being attacked by the FBI, for example, Brandon Mayfield, a lawyer who was taken into jail, his house ransacked, false charges of terrorism applied. The excuse was that a partial print on a bomb in, I think it was Spain, was identified as his by the FBI, even though the investigators on the scene said there was no such thing, and there never was any such thing. And it was a complete lie, and it was a complete setup, and it was a frame-up, and it was a secret police action, and we don't react. We don't move. And that's because, again, monopoly media manipulation. Because we were told this story that, oh, Brandon Mayfield's a terrorist. And just like the case of Joe Walsh being slammed to the floor by G-Force, it turns out that what we were told was complete crap. And that is the business of those who formerly had the mantle of journalism. It's to keep us in place. And we need a new journalism. And that's why I'm part of KBOO. I'm not doing journalism right here. I'm doing opinion. But we do journalism here at KBOO as much as we can possibly afford, as much as we can get volunteers to do it. If you are interested in volunteering for KBOO News, if you would like to be shown how to become a responsible and accurate and powerful citizen journalist, maybe you should call 231-8032 and talk to Lisa Loving in the news department. But there's another number I'm inviting you to call right now, and that's to talk with me. The number is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Talking about monopoly media manipulation, talking about the corruption of the U.S. press, talking about elections, thrown elections, talking about climate change, homeless sweeps, and Barry is on the air.
Yes, Teresa.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay, real good. I was caused to leave from where I could use a phone this morning, leave early, so I couldn't call in. I had to get to another phone somewhere. Well, anyway, Joe Walsh, hey, I don't need to complain about anything at all. I've been before city council a couple times, and I've spoken to them about the two blocks in back of Washington High School, and no comment from them. And I guess Joe Walsh, I've heard him talk before the city council, and apparently he's not getting any response either. But do you know those two blocks in back of Washington High School that could go for the homeless for an encampment?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, there are a lot of people outside the fence just camping, waiting, and nothing happening. Okay, and so Joe Walsh, yeah, he's got a lot more to complain about than myself. That's one thing I wanted to talk about. And then our media, I could go in a couple ways. I listen to NPR a lot of times in the evening. There are things on, special things on that, but I noticed a lot, some of the people on there will make sort of small jokes or condescensions toward Bernie Sanders, like he's not the regular guy, you know. This is our media, and I'm sure somebody might get paid for that or something.
Well, I've often said, you know, there's great radio and fascinating stuff on OPB and on NPR.
Yeah.
And but when it comes to certain categories, they are very much, well, for example, the cheerleaders for imperialism.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Well then about this, I don't think Senator Sanders has yet conceded. I hope that he hasn't, because in New York and in California, you were talking about California, and Greg Palast, he has a really good conception of the situation, better than anyone, I'm sure. In those two states, Senator Sanders didn't get a complete hearing. I mean, provisional ballots were given out.
Which should be just illegal. I mean, the reason provisional ballots are given out is to disenfranchise people. And the reason the way that they did it, the way they gave out those provisional ballots, yeah, was they intentionally, and they understand demographics, they know how to do this, they intentionally excluded Bernie Sanders voters by giving them provisional ballots. And the way they did it, if I recall correctly,
uh-huh,
is that if you had signed up anything like recently, in other words, if you had signed up for the Democratic Party in reaction to the fact that Bernie Sanders was part of it, then, whoops, it turns out there's a problem with your registration, so here's a provisional ballot for you.
Yeah, that has especially happened in New York. A group of people that were sort of like independent, they would have been given provisional ballots, something like that.
Oh, yes, I remember something more specific now. It was in California, you're allowed to vote in the primary even if you're not a Democratic Party member.
Uh-huh.
And so the elections officials, who are Democratic Party officials, decided that they would give provisional ballots instead of regular ballots to persons wanting to vote in the Democratic Party primary. So you show up for the Democratic Party primary, you're not in the Democratic Party, you're supposed to be allowed to vote, you're given a provisional ballot instead. Sneaky. And that's why the New York Times, you know, the New York Times is holding on to that excuse. They're saying, oh, well, everything's done fair and square. Well, it's not. That was a trick.
Exactly.
It was not something that would be tolerated in any other country. In any other country, it would be called loudly by the United States election fraud. And that's just what it was.
Yeah. And one thing very quickly, because of this, he wasn't given a complete election in New York and in California. He should go to the Carter Center and have a couple of his attorneys, one for New York and one for California, bring one person from the Carter Center with him. That person be a witness.
Well, that'd be ironic, isn't it? I mean, you last heard about the Carter Center when they were checking out the elections in Haiti. Hey, I've got some other callers, so I'll go to them, and thank you very much for your call, Barry.
Yeah, and I wish well to Bernie Sanders, and I won't concede that he has conceded, if he has, and I hope he hasn't, okay?
No, he'll be at the convention. He'll be having his say there.
Real good. And thank you, Teresa.
Thanks for your call. Good. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Lewis is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Thanks for letting me talk. I don't want to go on and on about Bernie Sanders, but I think what's really important as far as Sanders is concerned is that we find some way of keeping the movement, for lack of a better word, going. I mean, it's like Occupy, Extended, et cetera.
Well, there's a way to do that, and I suspect the Sanders campaign will do it, and that is by running for president, you get access to a gigantic mailing list. Mailing and an email and phone list, and that is how Pat Robertson stayed in electoral politics for, well, not just electoral, but that's how Pat Robertson stayed so effective in his right-wing anti-woman campaigns over the years, is because he had a gigantic mailing list from the Republican Party by running for president there.
Very good, very good. I've already switched back to independent, and out of protest, I think that I'll probably vote for Bernie anyway, because I'm really upset at how the election process works in America. I mean, even Jimmy Carter was asked one time if he would oversee any of the votes in any of the elections, et cetera. He goes, oh, as corrupt as America is.
Oh, that's telling, isn't it?
Answer.
That's very telling. I'm so glad Jimmy Carter is still alive.
I am, too. He's a wonderful man.
Well, thanks for your call.
And I guess I'll just leave it at that and get on with other conversation with other people in my mind.
All right, then. Thanks for calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Harry is on the air.
Ah, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I want to talk about media manipulation.
All right, then.
Yeah, well, last year, Nova had a program about salmonella in chickens. I don't know if you ever saw that. And they were trying to get the FDA to investigate, and it took 13 months before they found evidence that it of the salmonella. But they were reporting in the news, especially the local news here in Portland, that grown in Oregon chickens have salmonella. Please cook your chicken thoroughly. Grown in Oregon chickens. Well, it never said the words Foster Farms. Now, if I would have heard Foster Farms, I wouldn't have bought any Foster Farms chicken. So this was, but all the channels did it. And the local media also, how they handled the Mosier oil train wreck, they kind of passed over it. They didn't really mention that, hey, oil actually spilled in the Columbia, you know. And this was a very dangerous thing. And also the Harney County, they were kind of sketchy about reporting any of it. But how do they get us to control us? Well, I don't know if you've noticed that if you're watching the local news, they all come at the same time, 5 p.m., that they have their commercials at the same time. So if you turn a channel, they all have commercials at the same time. They all do the news. They all do the sports at the same time. They all do the weather at the same time. So it must be some way of that's how they control us, because they're
Well, just that format tells you that it's about control and not about information. If it were about information, sports would be a separate show. Weather would take 15 seconds because there is so much information to tell. For example, just in local news, I was just talking about this story with the City Council 4 being treated brutally. That's a story. It has various edges to it. As I said, it's no fun when Joe and the gang get to yelling at you. But then on the other hand, if the City Council didn't want to be yelled at, you'd think that they would act more humanely and more rationally when it comes to police oppression.
That is true. That is true. And also the national media does it also. Like you mentioned about Bernie Sanders not counting votes. I didn't hear anything about this. Not the votes not all being counted. And now,
oh, yes, and you hear just the opposite in the New York Times article that I was reading. That,
exactly. So,
oh, well, you know, they're shaking their rattles and pounding their drums, but, you know, Hillary won anyway, and that's the end of the story. And for the majority of Americans who pay any attention to it whatsoever, that is the story. That's how it works.
Yeah. Okay, hey, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, the stories we are encouraged to tell ourselves and each other. The story that here in America, we have the economic system, capitalism, which you're not supposed to mention very much, except in terms of praise. Capitalism is conflated in most people's minds with economic activity, which is not what it is. And having said that, I think I'll repeat myself for the 10th time and just talk about what capitalism is and what it isn't. Capitalism is the assigning of rights to the person who has capital. And this is an assigning of rights that is based on the framework that came out of feudalism. In feudalism, you assigned power to families actually depending on what sort of armies they could mobilize. But when it came to the official excuse, it was because God said so. It was a God-given right for the king and his court to rule over the land, for the serfs to give tribute, and for this hierarchy to be in place. And so, since that framework had so warped the human mind for centuries in Europe, when capitalism sprang up, it was as a variation of feudalism. And so, the hierarchy stands in place, and in place of the king, you have whoever showed up with cash first. And it doesn't matter if that person showed up with cash by borrowing it, by stealing it, or however, rights are assigned to the capitalist. That capitalist then becomes the boss. The boss has employees. The employees do what the boss says. Not only do they do what the boss says, but they have nothing to do with the steering of the of the concern, let's say it's a furniture factory, they have nothing to do with what furniture is produced, how it is produced, how fast it is produced, how long in the day it is produced, what they are paid. And this is very handy for the capitalists because what they are paid is a fraction of what they produce. That's why capitalism works. That excess, that long yap and more than that, goes to the top. And then if you have a good capitalist, it gets reinvested. But these days, short-term profit tends to rule, and money doesn't get reinvested. For small businesses, that usually means that the business collapses after a short while. For larger businesses, that means that you are demanded as an employee to work harder and harder for less and less. And that money goes to salaries. It goes to stock prices if it's set up that way. And it goes to the financiers, especially, who provided the larger sums of cash. So under capitalism, you have a system of extraction, which, as I was saying, is based on the rule of kings. And like a king, the capitalist can decide to fire you as an employee to get rid of 1,000 employees at one stroke if they feel like it. Just like that, it's totalitarian. And we don't think about it that way. Capitalism is totalitarian. And you know how totalitarian it is. If you were ever kicked out of a job after working your butt off to get the job, to get education to get the job, to keep the job, to go along to get along, and all of a sudden, oh, well, we're not going to have that factory. We're not going to have that office in Portland anymore. And here's G-Force to kick you off from your desk. Often it's not. So it's a totalitarian system, and it is intentionally conflated with economic activity. People do things like repair bicycles in a one-person shop or a three-person shop or something, say, well, you know, I'm being a capitalist as best I can. No, you're not. You don't know from capitalism. You're just engaging in economic activity. You're selling labor. Now, there are edges of capitalism. If you have a three-person shop and you're the owner and you pay the other two wages and nothing else and no other considerations and no rights to decide what sort of work is being done and when, if you're like that, then yeah, you're hedging towards capitalism, but you're just a baby capitalist. You ain't nothing. And basically, you're just acting within the paradigm that you find yourself. No, the big capitalists are more like Jeff Bezos and Amazon. And it's about extraction. It's about totalitarianism. It's about, I mean, it's very important for the big capitalists that you are made poor and ignorant. So look around us. What do we see? We see people disenfranchised, and that's very profitable. How's it profitable that people are jobless and homeless? Well, would you like a job? Well, you'd better try a little harder, because look over there. Oh, that could be you and your family. Would you like your kid to live in that tent? You think that's okay? Oh, yeah, that's very profitable because it certainly drives wages down. It's the index of desperation. The index of desperation is up, wages are down. And that's how they like it. That's how the Koch brothers like it. That's what billionaires are about. And that's why I say I want to give you the information to destroy billionaire rule. And one of the first things you need to know is capitalism is an illegitimate system of totalitarian rule. And there are better ways to engage in economic activity, like that three-person bicycle shop I talked about before. It could be a cooperative. You can all make the decisions. Not everybody wants to make all the decisions all the time. Not everybody even wants to be educated how to do that. But if you have a cooperative, you can decide who's going to do that and when, who's enthusiastic about it. And if you keep it transparent, well, it can really thrive. And there are great examples of thriving cooperatives, even in American society. I mean, look at the Amana colonies, for example. But there's the Mondragon in Spain. You can have prosperity, real prosperity. Real prosperity means you don't worry about if you're going to be able to stay in the place where you're staying. Real prosperity means you don't have to worry about whether you're going to get health care and food. And whether you will have time to engage socially and to raise your own kids. That's real prosperity. We could have it. We have to say no to capitalism. And before we can say no to capitalism, we have to know what the hell it is. Okay, so that's my rant. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. This capitalism has to do with the brutality of the police. I mean, the brutality of the police is very much important in keeping a system of totalitarian rule in place. People are going to chafe against it. People are going to fight against it. How could they not? So intimidation, and intimidation has to be in place. And the worse conditions get, the more intimidation there has to be. The velvet glove comes off the iron fist. And I believe it was Dan that is Dan is calling.
Yeah, hi, Teresa. You're in good form this morning.
Thank you.
And I want to, pardon me, want to agree with your take on OPB, which is what I refer to as part of Narcissist Permission Radio. But
yes, you're good. You're lawful and abiding, and you listen to OPB. There's definitely that message in there.
The terrorism correspondent, that's not her title, Temple Raston, I believe, is her last name. Boy, is she an insidious propper-up of a crumbling empire. But the reason I called, I'm genuinely interested in your take on this about the media. What do you make of course, they're snarky, but the Portland Mercury and Willie Week, and also in its news straight reporting, I find the Portland Tribune, if you filter through its very narrow blinders, the Portland Tribune can also be quite informative. What's your take on those three as alternatives in our fair town?
Well, I happen to be raging against the Oregonian, but I will read the Oregonian when I get a chance. They have won Pulitzer Prizes. There is some wonderful reporting and reporters there, but too often when it comes to certain categories, they take this attitude, and it was very broad, and so I was very loud about this this one report, as you may have heard if you were listening at the top of the hour. That and when it comes to Willie Week and the Mercury and the Tribune, I would say they often have good reporting and good articles, and I would say a little bit more so these days, partly because the Oregonian has been so cut back by its chain ownership. Let's see, it used to be the Newhouse Brothers, and I think it still
it's
is.
Still Advance.
Still Advance, okay.
Advance Publications, that's Newhouse.
Yeah, they've really been dialed back. I mean, they've got their, well, I mean, what is it, 80% less than what it used to be. So
the two weeklies, Mercury and Willie Week, I find, you know, they're expanding digitally. They're not just on their print editions, and you can get some good stuff there pretty regularly.
That's very necessary, and in fact, that, of course, is what KBOO has done, and now KBOO is as much a digital production, as much a web production as a radio station.
What I get the O, and you get some good stuff, and Sundays it's semi-worthwhile, but the days when they don't home deliver, Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, you're in line at some checkout counter. You can read that paper in the 4 minutes in line and have time to spare on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Should check them all out if you've got time. There's going to be some good stuff and some conformist stuff as well.
Teresa, you carry on. When I donate to KBOO, which I do, I always say this is for your show.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the boost. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I think I have time for one more call. Hi,
this
Boris.
It's a recording.
Oh, it's a recording. Well, you know, at least that's a... I'll try and take one additional call. We'll just let that percolate through the system for a second here. And I want to say that coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll have Chris Andre and then Flashpoints at... whoops, I think I made an error there. Okay, we will have Flashpoints then at 10 o'clock. I may not have that information correctly. Okay. Let me just check with the engineer. Do we have Flashpoints coming up or Chris Andre? Chris Andre is next at 10 o'clock with Air Cascadia, and then it'll be Flashpoints at 10:15. Sorry for the confusion there. Well, you've been listening to Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. You've been listening on 90.7 FM in the Portland area. I was just traveling earlier this week and noticed that you can get that in Salem. So hello, Salem. Hope that you can send in your donations from Salem. You can hear us in Vancouver, Washington, getting out further on the I-5 corridor there. We have other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, and we have KBOO.FM, where you can contribute on the contribute button over there on the side of the screen, and it is via the World Wide Web that we go out to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. A couple minutes before 10 o'clock on your Thursday, we're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints. Today, a dreamer speaks out about Obama's immigration program, and the Supreme Court decision on immigration, and an anti-nuclear activist discusses the first solar-powered space capsule headed for Jupiter. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with Chilean writer Lina Meruane about Seeing Red, her intense, visceral novel about the relation between the body, illness, and human relationship. That's all coming up right after Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up here on The Boo. Hey, thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. This year, the festival will be held July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Everyone will need a pass this year to see such artists as Dr. John and the Night Trippers, Liv Warfield and the Special Horns, Curtis Salgado, and many more. More information about passes, the performers, the role of the Oregon Food Bank, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, June 30th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real radio for real people at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest, we're going to try to reach Steve Horn. He has on the Dismog blog always a